And it's just happened, but let's remind you briefly. These are some of the questions we're interested in. And first up, we want to know what the consequence relation is in general, although that's not our primary focus, except insofar as it helps with what is our primary focus, which is the question, what is the logical consequence relation? Okay, and I said that you might well think that we start with an absolutely general understanding of the consequence relation, something that covers every case in which some premises can guarantee the truth of a conclusion. And then we focus in on logical consequence by adding in conditions. Right? So one way of doing that would be to say something like this. You've got a case of consequence in general where the premises guarantee the truth of the conclusion. Truth of the premises guarantees the truth of the conclusion, whatever the circumstances. But logical consequence is like that, except that what explains that connection of guarantee is something to do with form or structure. Okay? So you've got something, you'll always have a case of consequence, but this is a subclass of cases of consequence where consequence is dictated by form or structure. That's one kind of view. As I said, it'll turn out that not every view that people have about logical consequence works like that or seems to work like that. That arguably some of the key ideas about consequence indeed probably, insofar as you were told very much about this in first year or in subsequent bits of logic, more or less the standard account of logical consequence arguably doesn't fit that pattern. Okay? It's such that it treats logical consequence as very different from other cases of consequence. Not as a special case, but as something else entirely, something alien. What we're moving towards is a more specific question, which is what kinds of theoretical accounts have been offered? We'll be focusing in particular on at least the basis for what I just called the standard approach to logical consequence, something like the one that you learn about in introductory logic. We're going to set some of those accounts up, and then we'll be looking at criticisms that have been offered from the perspective of what we might pre-theoretically, or perhaps post a bit theoretically, want of an account of consequence. So what we're going to be looking at, in effect, very roughly, is here's what we told you in the first year about logical consequence, and here's what most working logicians think about logical consequence, and here are some reasons for thinking it's hopeless. Okay, so challenging, and then perhaps defending the most orthodox approach to these issues, seeing whether that approach is defensible, or whether, in effect, it kind of changes the subject. Okay? We start off with an idea of what we want logic for and what we want it to do, then we shift to the best theoretical account of the nature of logical consequence that's on offer, and we're not doing a better job, we're just doing a completely different job. We're moving from an account of what we cared about when we started doing logic to an account of something completely different. Interesting in and of itself, perhaps, but not helping us with what we really wanted logic to help us with. That's the kind of thing we'll be considering. But we'll move slowly towards that. So related, I said that there are at least three different kinds, very broadly, three different kinds of approach that have been taken to the nature of consequence and the nature of logical consequence. So one kind, the modal account, talks about consequence in terms of something like the idea I sketched of possible worlds. Okay? Have the idea that some things are possible, right? It's possible for me to start running around the room. Some things are impossible. It's not possible for me to start running around the room at light speed, or for me to both run around the room and not run around the room at the same time. Okay? The idea of possible worlds is the idea that all of the cases that aren't ruled out as impossible are in some sense possible, where that means something like there's a possible case or a possible world or a possible way for things to be in which those things actually happen. Okay, so something's possible just in case it occurs in some possible world. And that might just be a restatement of the idea of possibility. We have the idea of some things being possible and some things being impossible. And perhaps we have the idea of some things being absolutely necessary. Right? So you might think, look, whatever else is going on, either I'm running around the room right now, or I'm not running around the room right now. Right? And that has to be true in every possible world, you might think. So that's absolutely necessary. From that perspective, the modal account would say that some premises have, as a logical consequence or as a consequence, a conclusion, just in case there's no possible world at all, it's impossible for the premises to be true in some case and the conclusion to be false. It's kind of modal account. Right, you might have that kind of account and still fuss about exactly how we should understand the relevant notion of possible and impossible, but that would be the general form of a kind of modal account. And many people think that's the most natural and pre-theoretical account that one could give of consequence in general and of logical consequence in particular. Now, you might think that possibility or impossibility has to be assessed a priori by reflection, right? I mean, the idea, I don't think this is quite right, but the crude idea is that what observation or experiment can tell you about is how things in fact are, right? And to that extent, it can tell you about something that's possible, but it can't in general tell you about what's not possible, right? The mere fact that something hasn't happened doesn't show it to be impossible, right? I tell you now, I'm not going to start running around the room. That's not going to happen. But it's perfectly possible, well, modulo my lack of health, it's possible for me to run around the room. That's not something observation delivers, right? You might think that's something more like reflection delivers. So you might think, kind of consistently with something like the modal account, get the idea that you can only tell whether a relation of consequence obtains by a priori reflection. Right? You can only tell that something's impossible, that it's impossible for premises to be true and conclusion false, by reflection, okay, in general. And that might lead you to something like the a priori account, that you only have a case of consequence proper where you can tell by that kind of a priori reflection that it couldn't be or it isn't that the premises are true and the conclusions are false. And that might connect up with the idea that one can do things like logical proofs a priori. I can run through the steps of a logical proof without doing any kind of experiments, you might think. And in doing that, one traces out connections between premises and conclusion by reflection. And one might think that where one can do that, one's discerned a genuine connection of logical consequence or consequence, and where one can't do that, one hasn't. You might think. So that would give you the a priori account, which might, as I've said, have very similar results to the modal account. But it would be different, because the modal account looks like what we might think of as a kind of metaphysical or truth-directed account. It's an account of features of the world. Here's a fact about the world. It couldn't be that these premises are true and this conclusion false. Right? Or a fact about all possible worlds, whatever. This, the a priori account, looks to be an account based in epistemology, or what it's possible to know by particular means. Right? So it looks like, from that perspective, it's a very different kind of account. They might have the same results, but they might not. The third kind of account looks kind of metaphysical again, but it's very different from the modal account, at least on its face. It might end up collapsing into having the same results as the modal account. And this is the topic neutrality account. Right, and this kind of fits some of the things we said about how we focused in on the subject matter for logic. Just sort of saying, well, one reason for not trying to give an account of consequence in general was because there'd be too many particular cases. You'd have to have a mini account for vixens, a mini account for humans, mortals, and so forth. You wouldn't get one overarching account. The topic neutrality account fits that by saying that where you have a genuine case of logical consequence, that's explained by absolutely general, the most general features of your subject matter. Something like the structure of the subject matter as opposed to the particular contents of that structure, or the form of the subject matter rather than, again, the content of the subject matter. That would be a version of a kind of topic-neutral account. And there the idea is that you have a genuine case of logical consequence, where you have a case where the premises aren't true and the conclusion false, where that's explained by these very general structural or formal features of what you're talking about. Presumably, structural features that govern absolutely everything there is, right? That's the idea. It's not going to be that you'll find a topic that doesn't fit this structural idea. Again, it might turn out that anything meeting that condition will be such that, right, you can figure out that it meets that condition a priori, because perhaps a priori cognition gives you access to very general structural features of the world, even though you need to do observation to fill in the blanks, right, to scoop the contents. And similarly, it might be that the topic-neutral account sustains the same output as the modal account. It might be, right, that when we get to this level of structural form with respect to the universe, maximally general, then any possible set of elements, any possible set of contents will fit into that structure. Right? So if something is such that it's a case of consequence that's explained by structural features shared by absolutely everything, then it might be that it's shared by those structural features are shared by everything possible. And in that case, if you've got a case of consequence governed by topic neutrality, it will thereby be a case meeting the conditions of the modal account, so we might think. So it might be, for all we've said, that all three of these accounts give you exactly the same result, right? They're what we call in the trade extensionally equivalent, right? If you've got a pile of putative cases of arguments, sets of premises and conclusions, it might be that all these accounts will sort those into exactly the same two piles, right? But for all that, it's consistent with their providing very different accounts of why things end up in those piles. Related to what I said in the last lecture about different things you might be up to in a logic, you might think that although we might hope and expect some of these accounts to run in step in that sense, to have the same extension, we might nonetheless think of them as having different roles in the way we think about logical consequence. So, for example, you might think the modal account tells you what it is for conclusion to follow from some premises, to be a consequence of some premises. And this a priori account doesn't tell you anything about that, but it does tell you something about the methods or the rules to be followed in determining, right, trying to figure out whether some set of premises and conclusion meet the constitutive account, right? Fit the account you want to give of the very nature of consequence, right? So you might think, again, crudely, the modal account might fit, you know, question one on your first year logic exam, probably, something like define validity, right? That's a way of defining a relation of consequence, right? So that's your account of the nature of consequence. Then when you learn about truth tables, or you learn about natural deduction, then you're learning something about how to go about tracing out connections that meet your definition of consequence or validity. And that's something like methods or rules. It doesn't tell you what it is for a relation of consequence to obtain, but it does provide you with a means of tracing out whether those connections hold in any particular case or not. Okay, so here's the thought I mentioned a minute ago. Focusing in now on logical consequence. Right, suppose we had some standing conception, some working idea of an account of consequence in general and what that should look like. Suppose, for example, that we start off by buying into the modal account. Right, version of the modal account. So we say, look, you've got a case of consequence in general if it can't be that the premises are true and the conclusion false. Now we want to focus in on logical consequence. And one idea, one proposal, is that this is like consequence, so perhaps it fits that most generic account, the most generic form of the modal account, but it's restricted to subclass of cases where the holding of consequence relations in general is explained by appeal to form. Okay? So here we have the idea of formal consequence. Okay? We can specify perhaps a notion of formal consequence, and then the proposal will be that logical consequence just is formal consequence. It's consequence plus, right? But in particular, it's consequence plus form or formality. Okay, so here, again, compare all men are mortal, Noah's a man, therefore Noah's mortal, with Noah's mortal, therefore Noah will not live forever. And to a first approximation, the idea is that we think that 9 is explained by its form, right? The fact that Noah's mortal follows as a consequence of the premises is explained by something formal or form-like. By contrast, Noah's mortal, therefore Noah will not live forever, we might think isn't. It's not explained by form, rather it's explained by the specific content of mortality and not living forever. Now, one reason for thinking that, at least with respect to the first case, is that 9, the thing we said looked formal, forms a pattern of sorts with other cases. So all fish can swim, Flipper's a fish, therefore Flipper can swim. Right? Looks like it has the same kind of shape, at least superficially. All animals respire, Noah's an animal, therefore Noah respires. All numbers are invisible, pi's a number, therefore pi's invisible. Right? Again, structurally they look very similar. They look to have the same shape or form. So those cases all seem to involve consequence, at least some kind of consequence relation, between the premises and the conclusion. Right? In other terms, they're valid. Right? They look like valid transitions. Valid arguments. And they also share something like this pattern. All F's are G, F A, therefore G A. Right? Standard elementary predicate logic. And moreover, it's natural to think, and seems true, that all arguments that share that pattern are also going to be valid, are also going to be cases of consequence. As it's natural to think that they're sharing that pattern, they're sharing that form, might play a role in explaining why they're all cases of consequence, as you might think. By contrast, not all arguments seeming to share the pattern of 10, Noah's mortal, therefore Noah won't live forever, seem to be valid, because the form here looks more like FA, therefore GA. Right, so a bunch of cases where you get something that looks to be of the same form or the same shape, but where the conclusion doesn't seem to follow. Noah's a carpenter, therefore Noah will live forever. Noah's mortal, therefore Noah's a carpenter. Noah's a carpenter, therefore Noah can swim. Right? None of those look straightforwardly to be cases of consequence, even though they share the same form as something that we did think might be a case of consequence. That at least suggests that what explains the obtaining of a consequence relation in the opening target case isn't straightforwardly a matter of form. It doesn't prove that, because we've simply assumed that this is the right account of the operative pattern, but it suggests that that's what's going on. So, one way of attempting to capture the idea of logical consequence involves this idea of formality. So the idea is something like this: an argument is logically valid, or a case of consequence, just in case, first of all, it's valid, right? First of all, it's a case of consequence in general, and second, terrible, slipped apostrophe. Second, its validity depends upon its form. Okay, what explains why
that consequence relation obtains is a matter of form.
Okay, so as a working hypothesis, okay, logical consequence is consequence plus, and its consequence in particular, plus form.
Now consider a kind of test case.
Noah's a man and Noah's a carpenter, therefore Noah's a carpenter. Right? That looks okay, that looks like a case of consequence, right? The question now is, what should we say its form is? What should we say its pattern or structure is? What's responsible on this kind of formal idea for the obtaining of this relation of consequence? And here there are two kinds of options. One option is to say that the form is FA and GA, therefore GA, right? But another option would be to say, but look, that's not really the pattern because that involves and. That imports specific subject matter into what one's saying about this case. That would be like proposing that the form of Noah is mortal is Noah is mortal, or mortal A, or something like that, rather than, more generally, FA. So from that perspective, we might want to consider that the form of Noah's a man and Noah's mortal is FA blank GA, therefore GA. Okay? You might think that fits more closely the idea of formality, the idea of attending simply to structure. But that will make a difference to whether we want to say that this argument is formally valid. Okay? So, if the form is FA and GA, therefore GA, that looks to be okay. As long as we hold and fixed, that looks to guarantee that if the premises are true, the conclusion will be true. By contrast, if the form is FA blank GA, then that gives us the opportunity to slot in anything we like, at least anything we like that's suitable to that position in the structure, and test whether every example of that kind is going to provide a guarantee, provide a case of consequence. So if the form's 18, 20 here is an instance, but 21 isn't. So Alfred's a logician, and Alfred's a philosopher, therefore Alfred's a philosopher. That will be an instance if we're focusing on 18, and that looks okay. But 21, Alfred's a logician or Alfred's a philosopher, therefore Alfred's a philosopher, won't be a case. And that's good because 20 looks to be valid, or a case of consequence, and 21 looks not to be. By contrast, if we allow that the structure is FA blank GA, and we allow that OR is just as good a candidate as AND to go in the missing slot, we'll have to allow that both of these count as instances of the required form or pattern. And if we do that, we'll have to allow that our opening argument wasn't formally valid because it has instances that aren't valid at all, like this one. Right? It's perfectly possible for it to be true that Alfred's either a logician or a philosopher without accepting that he's a philosopher, because you can be a logician and therefore be a logician or a philosopher. So, the upshot, naturally enough, is that our opening case like Noah's a carpenter and blah blah, is only formally valid, only formally a matter of consequence relation, if its form involves AND as a fixed point, right? It doesn't allow you to slot in OR in place of AND. So it's only formally valid if you count AND as, in effect, part of the form or part of the structure. So structure alone, right, structure conceived of more generally, doesn't seem to be sufficient to capture what we want. Rather, it looks as though we're going to have to appeal, in addition, to the role of what are known as the logical constants. Right? So things like AND, OR, conditional, and so forth. Right? They're going to have to be held fixed if we're going to have anything interesting to say about validity, consequence, by appeal to form. The question at that point becomes, well, how exactly is the initial list of constants generated? And how is the range of and things like them and so forth going to be cached out? Right, so why is it that we're allowed to hold fixed and or if then and the like, but we're not allowed to hold fixed mortal? What makes the difference between those cases? What principles govern selection of the logical constants, the things that are held constant through all the other changes that we're willing to allow in tracing out form, from all the other cases that we don't hold fixed? It's important to notice that the answer to that question is going to partly determine what we think the nature and the extent of logic is. Is going to interact there, right? In effect, the more things you include within the scope of the constants, more things are going to count as cases of logical consequence, right? So if you include vixen as a logical constant, right, and you include living forever, sorry, being female as a logical constant, then vixen, being a vixen will entail, have as a consequence, being female. Similarly for mortality and not living forever. If you don't, you don't. If you include and as a logical consequence, then the thing we just looked at as a logical constant, the thing we just looked at will count as a case of consequence. If you don't include and, you allow and to be a blank, that can then be replaced by or, then you'll lose that as a case of logical consequence, right? So on this kind of view, it looks as though answering the question what the scope of the consequence relation is depends on both the idea of formality and a suitable approach to the nature of logical constants. Different answers to questions about those two things are going to give rise to different views about consequence. We'll come back to that a bit and talk about how people have tried to mark out the logical constants from other expressions. Okay, but continuing with the theme for a bit, got the idea that logic is about formal consequence. But the nature of logic is, it's to be about formal consequence. The idea is that an argument's logically valid, or its premises have as a logical consequence the conclusion, if and only if the argument's valid and its validity traces to its form, for example, to its structure or the pattern that its premises make, together with the contribution made by the logical constants, whatever exactly they are. The idea, target idea. I take it that's a version of something like the idea you get taught in introductory logic classes. What we're going to be doing in part is pursuing further articulations and developments of this kind of idea, how it plays out in the work of particular theorists. One of the theorists we're going to be focusing on in particular is this chap, Alfred Tarski, who was pretty much responsible for the precise form of the orthodox nowadays accounts of consequence. We're going to be looking at some challenges to his orthodox account. There's actually a really nice biography of Alfred Tarski available. I think I probably put a mention of it in the reading list. It's really good, but it turns out he's a horrible man. He used to have affairs with his female graduate students while living with his wife. And he always used to teach his graduate students in the middle of the night, high on speed. So he'd be speeding away teaching his graduate students at 4 in the morning.
and he just shouts at his wife to make him coffee and stuff. It's really quite horrible. But don't let that put you off his philosophical views. Okay. So that's what we're going to be doing. And here is the next topic. And here's another horrible man, Kurt Gödel. Okay, and I'm going to be thinking briefly in light of some of his work and some of Tarski's about following question. What's the relation between consequence and proof? Okay, I've already said something about that, how you might think about relations between those things. But I want to say a little bit more, sort of thinking about some of the issues we'll be talking about. I mean, I've said in effect, right, that you could have a view that said consequence and proof are just the same thing, right? In particular, because what it is for there to be a consequence relation between some premises and a conclusion is that there's a proof that the conclusion follows from the premises. One kind of view one might take about the relation here. Be useful in going through this just to briefly rehearse some of the things you will have doubtless done last year. Okay, so we start with the idea of a propositional calculus, right? So this has a syntax, and all this stuff is really doing something like specifying admissible forms or admissible structures that you can exploit in your system. So the syntax tells you what counts as an allowable sentence or something like that, an allowable well-formed formula in your theory. So the syntax starts with a lexicon, the basic components of well-formed formulas. So it'll have sentence letters. We're focusing on the propositional calculus, P, Q, R, P1, P2, and so forth. And it'll have a bunch of constants, right, which we're already worrying about. We're worrying about where this list of constants comes from. We'll have a bunch of constants, for example, not, and, or, if then, if known, if, or some variant of that set, right? And then it'll have a bunch of formulae. Sentence letters on their own are going to be formulae. If you've got a formula, then the negation of that formula is also going to be a formula. If you've got a formula, then that if you've got a pair of formulae, then formula one followed by and followed by formula two is going to be a formula. So and so far, and so forth. And that's all, right? Nothing not specified by those rules is going to count as a formula. So that's your syntax. And then you have a semantics, which tells you about, in particular, the meanings of the formulas you've got from the syntax, right? In terms of what's relevant on this conception of logic, truth values. So the semantics tells you something about how to assign truth values to formulae, starting with basic propositional letters. So the idea is, in giving a semantics, you give a kind of a structure, or what's known as a model, where that's an assignment, in this case, of truth values to sentence letters, and thence to all the formulae involving those sentence letters by appeal to rules governing the impact of the logical constants on the truth values of the whole sentences. So we assume for our purposes that each sentence letter has either the value true or the value false, and that each sentence letter can be assigned either, independently of any other assignment. So there are no intrinsic connections with the basic sentence letters between assigning true to one, forcing you to assign true to another. Right? So we're avoiding worries about things like, well, I've said that A is a vixen, so I have to say that it's true that A is female. Right? We don't have anything like that. All our sentences can be true or false in any pattern, all our individual sentences. Okay, so you know all that, and that gives rise to a set of rules governing what happens when you assign values to basic sentence letters, what happens when you put those basic sentences into more complex structures involving the logical constants. So it tells you that if you've assigned true to some basic sentence, then its negation is going to be false, right? And if you've assigned true to both of two sentences, then
the conjunction of those sentences is going to be true, and so forth through the truth tables, right? It's what you learn about in the first year. That's the main thing you probably learn about in the first year, right?
And this is all a semantics,
right? What this is doing is telling you about, in effect, what the bits of your language mean for you and what effects it has on one sentence, making changes at one level with respect to one sentence, what the impacts of that are on other sentences of your language. So the semantics shows you how the truth value of a formula in a structure is determined by truth values assigned to the sentence letters, together with their projection through the truth conditional meanings of the logical constants. Right? So it tells you how to go from assignments to basic letters up to assignments to complex propositions or sentences or formulae. And from that perspective, we can now define a logical consequence relation, the notion of logical validity, as follows, right? And this is just, I guess, the kind of thing you learned about last year. A set of formulae X has as a logical consequence a formula psi, if and only if there's no structure, right, no semantics, no assignment of values, in which all the formulae in X take the value true and psi takes the value false, right? There's no way of assigning truth values to your basic sentences in such a way that your premises come out true and your conclusion comes out false. Right? If there's no way of doing that, then the argument's valid. It's a case of consequence. And we write that with premises, double turn style, conclusion. Right? Double turn style is just one line down with two dashes across. That's just our formal shorthand for this is a logical consequence of this, or let's say a semantical consequence of this. Now, that tells us about kind of semantical consequence, and indeed, as I've in effect just said, it's normal, most people do identify that notion of semantical consequence. No assignment will allow the premises to be true while the conclusion is false, with logical consequence or validity. That's what you would have been taught in the first year in this logic course. That contrasts, though, with another way of approaching these relations, which is by way of proof or derivation or deduction. So a proof of some conclusion from a set of formulae within a given system, typically, is a finite sequence of formulae, starting with the formulae in your premise set, which might be empty, and ending with the conclusion, where each formula in the sequence is either one of your premises, or an axiom of your system, if you have that kind of system, or it's derived from preceding formulae in the derivation, according to one of the derivation rules, by rearranging it according to one of the derivation rules, rules of proof, rules of your natural deduction system. If you've got such a finite sequence, if such a finite sequence is available, you do such a derivation, then you have a proof. If not, if it's impossible to do that, then you don't have a proof. Okay, and we write premises single turn style conclusion to mean that there's a proof or derivation of the conclusion from the premises. It's just again a shorthand. And sometimes, in fact you could do this in semantics as well, sometimes we subscript the turn style to indicate the particular system we're using. Right? Because something might be a proof in one system of rules and not a proof in another system of rules. Depends on the rule system you're using. And a simple kind of case, kind you're presumably familiar with, would be this kind of case of natural deduction in a kind of Fitch-like system. you've got a couple of premises, and then the rules tell you what you're allowed to do to muck around with the premises and add in assumptions and the like, and they enable you to go from the premises to some conclusion. So since in this case you can go from these premises to this conclusion, right, by appeal at each step to application of one of the rules of your system, and this is clearly finite, we have that the premises sustain a proof of the conclusion, a derivation of the conclusion, which we write thus. Right, premises, single term style, conclusion. So now we have the idea of connection of proof and a connection of semantical consequence, and that enables us to categorise logics by appeal to their soundness and completeness. Okay, so we say that a logic is sound just in case wherever it's possible to derive a conclusion from some premises, it's also the case that there's a semantical consequence relation between the premises and the conclusion. Right, in short, you can never use the rules of the deduction system, the proof system, to take you from a sentence that your semantics says is true to a sentence that your semantics says is false. Right? So insofar as you're adhering to the idea that semantical consequence is important, you'll never go wrong in employing your deduction system. Okay? So an unsound logic, right? If you prioritised semantics and thought that what mattered to you was that you never start with a true sentence, a sentence your semantics says is true, and end up with a sentence your semantics says is false, right? If that's what worries you, then you want to avoid having an unsound deduction system. Because an unsound deduction system will sometimes allow you, by perfectly following through its rules, to start with what your semantics says is true and end with something your semantics says is false. Okay? And we say that a logic's complete, kind of converse property, if and only if, whenever there's a semantical consequence relation between some premises and a conclusion, it's possible to discern that relation through application of the rules of proof. Right? So being sound from the perspective of semantics is a way of never going wrong, and being complete is a way of there being no gaps in your proof system. Right? Your proof system allows you to access every case of consequence made available by your semantics. Nothing's left over. Your system's incomplete. It's not that you'll sometimes go wrong in following through the proof system. It's that following through the proof system will never tell you all of the cases of consequence that obtain in your system. All of the cases in which the premises can't be true while the conclusion is false. I mean, it turns out that, as far as I know, I mean, you only learned, people who did first year logic learned propositional calculus and first order predicate calculus in the first year. In those cases, there's no way both of these properties obtain provably by the systems you're using. The proof system you're using corresponds with respect to soundness with the semantics in both of those systems, propositional and first order logic, and the system's provably complete. Right, it's provable that you can't have cases where your semantics tells you that the relation obtains a semantical consequence and your proof system can't find that case. But it turns out that there are a bunch of other putative logical systems and other kinds of systems that aren't complete. Okay? And of course it's easy to come up with systems that aren't sound. Now, intuitively, it's at least prima facie plausible that we want our logic to be sound. For otherwise, it's going to be possible to prove things through our deduction rules that our semantics judges to be invalid. Right? there are going to be these cases where one perfectly adheres to the proof rules, the deduction rules, one starts with a true sentence, and one ends with what our semantics says is a true sentence, and one ends with what our semantics says is a false sentence. And that looks like a bad result in general. You don't want to start with truths, do lots of logic, and end up with falsehoods. Moreover, it's usual, it's typical, to treat failures of soundness as failures with the proof theory, right? And to seek to revise that bit of the theory accordingly, right? Rather than to treat failures of soundness as errors in the semantics. It's usual to view failures of soundness as showing that proof theory doesn't do its job properly, that it allows derivations that don't properly represent genuine consequence relations. Right? But if you're doing that, you're in effect assuming that your semantics correctly tracks the genuine nature of the consequence relation. Right? You're assuming that the semantics is getting things right, and now given that your deduction system goes off track with respect to your semantics, you're assuming that the problem's with the proof system. Right? It's failing to adhere to the genuine relation of consequence. But that's not absolutely forced, right? You could have a view that said, actually, the deduction system is telling me correctly where the consequence relations lie. So given that it's departing from what the semantics tells me, that's a sign that something's gone wrong with the semantics. The semantics telling me that these premises can be true while this conclusion's false. But that's wrong. They can't be. I know that because I've run through the proof. So there are different kinds of ways of responding to these kinds of failures. It's less clear to people in general why completeness should be thought of as a virtue or as a requirement on an adequate logical system. As I say, the logical systems that you will typically have used up to this point are complete. But it's not clear whether we should think that that's an essential feature of a logical system. Some people do think it is, and some people don't. And completeness guarantees that if the transition from premises to conclusion is valid according to the semantics, then it's going to be possible to construct a derivation from premises to conclusion, to construct a proof. So you'll be able to use your proofs to trace out the space of logical consequence. But you might think that we shouldn't expect to be able to do that in general. Right, you might think that a proof system is a bit like a way of knowing about the consequence relation while the semantics tells you what that relation really is. And from that perspective, you might think there should be no more reason to expect us to be able to know about all the cases of consequence by deploying a proof system than we think there's any reason to expect us to be able to know everything there is about the universe. Right? We don't think that. We think there are going to be plenty of things about the universe we'll never know. Right, by any of the methods available to us. If we think that, we might be willing to think something similar about logic. But I should stop there, I've overrun slightly. So we'll talk more about this next week. Thank you very much.